All right. Well, let's get rolling here because it's right about 2:30 and lots to do, lots to say. Thank you guys for coming this afternoon. I know that that beach is calling people's names right about Friday afternoon at the Pepperdine Lectures, and I appreciate you resisting the temptation and finding your way to the CAC and being here for this presentation. My name is Jacob Parnell, and I am the preaching minister at the Tri-Valley Church of Christ in Livermore, California. Anybody from Livermore? Yeah. Most of you. I am feeling the love. Thank you, Tri-Valley. So Mike asked me if I would pitch an idea for a class that goes along with the theme of the five scrolls that we've been doing this year. And I thought about it and was like, what can I do that fits the theme and that also gives me an excuse to get to do music with some of my favorite people in the world? And my brainstorm was relatively short. The first idea was like, maybe something out of Song of Songs. I could do like sexy songs with bearded bros or something like that. That could be good. Decided against that. And then I thought, okay, Lamentations and the Blues. There's some similarities there. And I did a little bit of research. I'm not the first person to make that comparison and to say, you know what, they have a lot of similar themes, a lot of similar voicing and tone and stuff like that. So that's what we're going to be exploring a little bit today. We have pretty much three goals for our time together. The first goal is, like I said, we're going to make some comparisons between Lamentations, the five poems that we find in the Book of Lamentations, and blues music. And specifically, we're going to be sort of limiting our scope of things to, like, blues is this huge musical genre, but we're going to be focusing in on the Mississippi Delta blues as much as possible. So just for the sake of time and all that. So yeah, we're going to be making some comparisons, and then we're also going to play some live music. We're going to have some songs that we'll perform for you guys, and you'll hear some of these themes that we bring out. And to help me with that, I have recruited two of my favorite people in the world. One of them is Justin Garza over here. You guys should clap for him. You'll find out why soon enough. Justin is the youth minister at the Tri-Valley Church of Christ in Livermore, and he's an exceptional bass player, so he's going to be playing bass on some of our blues tunes. And then Aaron Birch, you should clap for him also. I don't know how you summarize Aaron Birch. His resume is quite long, but I don't know anybody, I genuinely do not know anybody who is more passionate about music than Aaron. Like, I know people who love music, I know people who play music, and I know people whose life is music. And if you put all them on a stack, you could put Aaron on the top of them, because his heart is for music, and he's going to be singing, playing some blues with us today. So thanks to both of these guys. I could not have done it without you. So that's our second goal, is just to hear music. So you guys are in the right position to pull that off. And then third, we're going to end by sending you away thinking about the value of lament as a language and how that might play out in your church context. So if we reach those goals, we've been successful. So we're on our way. Let's start by talking about Lamentations and blues and the context that they come from. Because it wasn't just like somebody said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write some sad-sounding music or some really tragic poems. These things came out of genuine life experience and historical context that was the birthing ground for these two artistic forms. We'll start with the blues. Think about this. I want you to picture that you are locked inside of a cell. It's got iron bars, and the door slams shut. You can't get out. There's a guard standing on the other side of the door, and you're trapped inside there. You are a prisoner. And that's your life for years and years and years and years. And then one day somebody comes along, and they open up the door for you. The door to your cell is swinging wide open, and the guard who stands there just leaves and goes down the hallway, and you don't see that person. Now, you might think, that's great news. I'm free. But then as you make your way out of your cell and you try to find your way around, you realize that there's a long hallway with other locked doors, and the building that your cell is contained in is also locked from the outside. And so you're free, but you're not really free. If you could look out a window, you might see genuine freedom, but you're still locked inside. And that image, I think, is an appropriate way to describe how black people in the United States felt after the Civil War. A lot of you guys know about the history of slavery, so we're not going to rehearse the whole thing here, but I will point out, just for the sake of a number that might surprise you, that by 1820 in the United States, there were 10.1 million people who were brought over from Africa to serve as slaves. It was a huge percent of the population to build this country from the ground up. Civil War happens, and then this period of Reconstruction. You got the Emancipation Proclamation that says, hey, you're free. But then you also have Jim Crow laws. You have the lingering presence of the Ku Klux Klan. You have an oppressive sharecropping system that says otherwise. So it's like that cell, that you're now, you don't have to be in the cell anymore, but you're not really free. That was the situation for a lot of black people in America during this time. So you have to put yourself in this context and say, a lot of people think, okay, blues was this form of music, this sadness that came out of a position of feeling oppressed because of slavery. And that's true. That's kind of the background and what led to that. But more specifically, it was what happened afterwards. In slave times, it was like that was the reality. Like, you are owned as a piece of property. It's not a good thing, but that was a reality that people got used to. But then somebody swung open the door and said, you're free. And people walked out and found out that it wasn't really true. So there was a lot of disappointment and disillusionment that you can imagine coming from that time. That's what the blues was born out of. It was this unrealized hope. And it's a larger story than that, but just for the sake of our discussion today, I want you to keep that in mind. That's where the blues came from. You might have heard of the Great Migration from 1910 to 1970, where hundreds of thousands of black Americans went from rural areas in the South, and they migrated to the North and the West, and they found new life. Before then, there was another great migration of sorts from some of these southern farms into the Mississippi Delta region. There was work to be found there. There was the hope, a lot of times unrealized hope, of owning land and making a living and trying to exercise some of this promised freedom. And it's in the Mississippi Delta where the blues grew up. It was not necessarily invented there. It was kind of forming all along, but in the Delta is where the blues really took the shape that we understand today. Let's talk about Lamentations. Let's switch over and say, okay, 2,500, well, how long? Hundreds and hundreds of years before that. In the time of Israel, things have been kind of on the decline for a while with them. And come 586 BC, finally, Jerusalem is destroyed definitively, and the people are sent away as exiles. And you can read about this in the Old Testament. You go to 2 Kings 24 and 25, you get the account of the siege of Jerusalem. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon comes and says, like, nope, we're going to send most of these people away into exile. And the people that were left found that things were really, really bad. It was incredibly grim. There was hopelessness. There was poverty. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we look into the Book of Lamentations. But this was the context that the poems that we have, which are the Book of Lamentations, that's where they come from. I want you to take a moment now, and I want you to think about the worst thing that has ever happened to you in your life. The most tragic experience you've ever had, the worst stretch of hopelessness or dark period in your life. Just picture that in your mind for a second. And you don't have to answer out loud, but think about this. Did you ever write a song about that experience? Did you ever sit down and write a poem about the worst thing that ever happened to you? You might have done that. I haven't. I was too busy grieving and just trying to get my feet underneath me in times like that. Most people don't. But apparently, it's a very healthy thing that you should do. There's this professor at Harvard School of Psychology named Dr. Shelley Carson, and she says writing about an emotional life event can reduce the number of sick days that people report, it can improve immune functioning, and it can decrease dysphoria and anxiety. It can even improve your short-term memory and lead to better school grades for students. Isn't that interesting? Why is that? Simply put, it helps us regain a sense of control in a season or a situation that is way out of the norm. And that brings us to the first of the five parallels that I want to point out between Lamentations and the blues, and that is structure. Lamentations and the blues both have structure. And you might be thinking, Jacob, everything has structure. My house has structure. A donut has structure. And you're right. We're not just talking about the fact that they have structure, but the purpose that the structure in both of these serve. Let's talk about this for a second. In Lamentations, like I mentioned, there are poems. There's five chapters and there are five poems. And the poetic form that the artist or artists that wrote these poems chose to use is called an acrostic. I want to show you what this is. An acrostic is just a poem where each line starts with a different consecutive letter of the alphabet. So like A, B, and you all have to take your minds for a second. We, in English, we read from left to right. In Hebrew, they read from right to left. So take your understanding. Everybody hold your understanding like this. Hold up your hands. This is your understanding. And now flip it. Okay. And now read from right to left. You'll see this is the first chapter of Lamentations. This is the first letter, Aleph, of the Hebrew alphabet. So like line 1, verse 1, starts with Aleph. And then you get down to verse 2, line 2, and it's Beit. Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, so on. I don't know the fifth one. I know the fourth. That's as far as I can go. But you see this in Lamentations. Somebody took the misery and the poverty and the hopelessness that they experienced during this time, and they wrote a poem in the acrostic form. So that's the structure that we find. In chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 4, they all are 22 verses because there's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and each line, different letter of the alphabet. Chapter 3 has 66 verses, and that's because, go to the next slide, it's a tripling. It's like, wow, this is a triple acrostic here. So the first three verses, first three lines of chapter 3, all start with Aleph, and then 4, 5, and 6, Beit, and so on. Somebody did this. Somebody took the time to put this structure to something that was very, very hard for them to process. And then you don't get that in chapter 5, in case you're wondering. Chapter 5 abandons the acrostic form altogether. There's still 22 verses, but it's more like, all right, the misery is so bad we can't even stick to the alphabet anymore. It's really, really interesting that this is the structure that the artists use to express these sentiments in Lamentations. Now let's talk about the blues. This is called the 12-bar blues. Most blues songs have this structure. It's very common. It's a very, very standard way of forming the chords, sometimes with a capo on it. You might recognize it. If you're not sure what the 12-bar blues is, I promise you, you have heard it before. I used to live in Memphis, and if you go to Memphis on a weeknight, you go down Beale Street, which is just known for live blues, and just it's this music you can't help but hear, even if you're having a conversation. It's still playing in the background. And this last line of the 12-bar blues, very distinct. It goes, and you can predict what's coming next, and it's this. Right? You've heard that before, right? That's not something that I just made up. That is the ending of the 12-bar blues. You get 4 bars of E, 4 bars of A, or whatever the fourth is, depending on what key you're in. Go back to the root, and then you do this last line for your last 4 bars. This is a standard structure in blues. And you might think to yourself, well, that's the reason I don't like blues. Jacob, when I first started playing guitar, I was very excited about the blues because you learn 3 chords and you can play literally hundreds of blues songs. It's a simple form that's easy to get down early on. But as I played guitar for 4 or 5 years, I started going, it's the same thing over and over again. It's the same structure. And it varies in certain ways, but it gets kind of old and it gets kind of boring. And you might think that about blues too. I don't like blues because I don't like the structure. But think about this. Is your life structured most of the time? Do you have a phone that has a clock on it? Do you have a calendar that you keep? Do you make appointments to meet with people at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you try to show up on time? I'm guessing that you do. I'm guessing that your life in some way is very well structured, like mine is. But think about somebody whose life is unpredictable, unstructured, or they're in a time of tragedy or a crisis in their life. There's disorientation. There's like, I don't know what's going to come next. How might they feel about the 12-bar blues? It might be good to know, like, I don't know what's going on in my life, but I know that B is coming, that A is going to follow it, B again, and then da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It could be a very welcome thing to have that structure in your life. We want to play a song for you now that has this structure. There's a variation on the ending. It just stays on the E, but like I said, most blues songs have the same form. We're going to play a song now called Blue Harvest Blues, and my lovely wife Lisa is going to, she's been clicking the slide, she's going to continue to do that. The lyrics will be up here on the screen for you guys. Another feature about the blues, a structure that you might already know about that I'll point out, is a lot of times in blues songs, the first line and the second line, what do you notice about them? Exactly the same. Right? So Aaron's our vocalist today. He's going to be singing these songs, but you're going to hear him saying, standing on the mountain, far as I can see. And he's going to play the same thing again. And since you've already heard it once, I want to invite you to sing the second line. And when you see that in other songs we play, feel free to join in singing, because you'll have heard it, then you'll sing it a second time. So help us out with some of these vocals. This is Blue Harvest Blues by Mississippi John Hurt. You guys ready?
Yeah.
True.
Go for it. knows I can see. Standing on the mountain, far as I can see. Dark clouds around for me. I feel a little weary though, Lord, I got trouble in mind.
I'm feeling a little weary, Lord, I got trouble in mind.
Everything that gets me, everyone's so unkind. Hardest times come low, catch me unprepared.
Hardest times come low, catch me unprepared.
I haven't made a dollar, bad luck is all I've had. Lord, I cannot bear it, Lord, wasn't the hardest free.
Lord, I cannot bear it, Lord, the
heart is free. Putting off the money and I ain't got a doggone thing. I'm a weary traveler, on the run from place to place.
I'm a weary traveler, on the run from place to place.
If I don't find this somebody in my district,
I ain't got a mother, father,
that
left me long ago.
I was just rocking on with one of my folks, is I don't know. Blues around my shoulder, blues around my head.
Blues around my shoulder, blues all around my head.
You see why I like these guys? Indeed. Okay, so going along with this theme of acrostic, some people have pointed out, some commentators, as they look at why did they choose to use an acrostic to express the sadness and lamentations. Some people say, well, it's just what they decided to use. There's not really an explanation for it. But some people have guessed and posited that maybe it's kind of like a cataloging of the misery. It's like an A to Z, or in Hebrew, an Aleph to Tav, covering all of the possible calamities. So it's like, we have covered everything from start to finish. That could be part of the reason. But don't confuse that with Blind Willie McTell's A to Z Blues. You might not be familiar with this song, and I decided not to play it for you guys today because it's the story of a guy who's so fed up with his woman cheating on him and stealing his money that he decides he's going to take a razor blade and carve all of the letters of the alphabet into her skin. Yikes! Right? You're glad that we're not going to play this song for you. It's shocking. It's jarring. And that brings us to our next theme that we see in Lamentations and the Blues, and that is just raw honesty. You're going to get real talk from the blues. You're going to get real talk in Lamentations. B.B. King has a famous quote where he says, "Sometimes life gives you the blues, but the blues will always give you life." What he's saying there is they're not going to pull any punches. They're going to call it like they see it. And that's what you find. When blues came out, people were against it. A lot of Christians were anti-blues, and they called it the devil's music. And they said that it was bad because a lot of the themes, and this is an honest critique, I mean, they have a case here. A lot of times it talks about illicit things. A lot of times it talks about breaking the law or doing things that are not so Christ-like. Sex was a big theme in the blues. I read something in a book on the blues that said 75% of blues songs that came around out in like the 20s and 30s and 40s were about sex. So if that was this musical genre and the kids are like, we like this music, the parents are going to be like, no, you don't like this music. We're going to steer you over in this direction. But there's some very, very graphic lyrics in blues songs. I was surprised. Like things that I thought, okay, yeah, like graphic for the 30s, but like graphic for our times as well. They're being honest about life as they see it. And they're not cleaning it up or watering it down for any of the kids in the audience. And you get the same thing, believe it or not, in the book of Lamentations. Let me give you a few examples here. In chapter 1, you get Jerusalem depicted as this woman who has been shamed. And Jerusalem used to have all this glory and splendor, but now because the people sin, there is this lostness and this dirtiness to it. Listen to this language. Jerusalem has sinned greatly and has so become unclean. All who honored her despise her, for they have all seen her naked. She herself groans and turns away. Her filthiness clung to her skirts. She did not consider her future. That's a really, really graphic image of somebody who is involved in sexually illicit activity and then walks down the street and everybody can tell just visually that that has happened. It's really a graphic picture that's painted here. There's a couple more here describing women who have to eat their babies because there's so much famine because of starvation. There's just the desperation that the people are experiencing. Again, in chapter 4, with their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children who become their food when my people were destroyed. They paint this picture of how things were, how bad, how desperate the situation was there. Psalters, in his commentary on Lamentation, says, "Yet, but in the midst of all this doom and gloom, with faith in Yahweh at an all-time low, there still appears to be a thread of hope. And among the various factions, there existed another element among the survivors in Jerusalem, probably few in number, but it was those who were still loyal to Yahweh, despite all of this, despite all of the indications to the contrary, that where is God? What is God doing in this situation? There were still people who held on to hope. Their loyalty did not die, and it actually gave rise to these poems. This is what came out of their faith, of what was left of it. That takes us to our third theme. We saw structure. We saw raw honesty. The third thing that we see in both the Blues and in Lamentations is this theme of hope. There's still hope. A lot of people who study the laments, whether in Lamentations or in the Psalms, they break it down and they say there's these key elements that distinguishes a lament from a dirge. You might be familiar with a funeral dirge, or in ancient times they would actually hire people to mourn and wail. They still do that today in other parts of the world, I believe so. Somebody dies and it's their job to just scream and to cry and to wail, and it's this expression of the grief you're going through. A lament is not just crying and screaming as though that's all you can do. There's an intention to it. There's a structure that goes along with it. There's five elements that I want to point out here. Some people, when they break down the laments, they find six elements or seven elements, but I'm going to give you these five. And one is that you address God. You include God in your suffering. It's one thing to just cry out to the universe and say, "Ah, I hit my thumb," and "Ah!" There's not a lot of intentionality. It's more of just a visceral reaction. But with the lament, you say, "God, the things that I'm mad about, I'm going to aim them at you." And there's almost like an expression of faith in that. It's saying, I'm not going to leave God out of this conversation, but I'm going to direct my pain, my suffering, to the one who can do something about it. I still believe in you, God, even though I'm not sure what you're up to or where you are. And then the complaints. This is what's going wrong in my life. And then there's usually a request. God, here's what I want you to do about it. That's followed by or preceded by a motivation. This is kind of like sweet-talking God and saying, like, God, you know, you're the God of our forefathers. People trust in you. If you do this thing, more people are going to trust in you. So you're almost like persuading God to be God and act in a God-like way. There's this motivation we find in the lament. And then there's always this expression of hope. There is, even if I don't get an answer, even if things don't get better, yet I will trust in you because you are God and you're worthy of my trust. So there's this theme of hope. And you see this in Lamentations chapter 3 and chapter 5. They kind of follow this structure. Lamentations 3 is the middle chapter. If you took the book of Lamentations and you put it on your finger like this and you spun it around like a basketball, right where your finger would be, right in the center of Lamentations, you get this beautiful expression of hope that a lot of you are probably already familiar with. I'm going to read this. I think I'll put it up here. Chapter 3, starting in verse 21. Yet, amidst all this suffering, amidst all of these problems, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. That sounds like a song we know. Why don't we take a moment and sing that together? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in Him. Yeah, there's hope. What about the blues? Do you get the theme of hope in the blues? The answer is yes, but it might not be the same kind of hope you find in Lamentations. Not always necessarily. There's hope, but it's not necessarily hope in God. The people who wrote this song, like I mentioned, a lot of them came out of the situation of slavery. Generations before or more recently, either an oppressive sharecropping system, a society that didn't want them to succeed, and stories of being owned as property and slaves, and just that either in the cell or like the open cell door, but still in the locked building. A lot of these folks learned Christianity from the people who were enslaving them. So what would you do when you got a guitar and you sat down to write a song? Would you include the God that the people who were cracking the whip and holding the keys to your door? Would you go along with that? A lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't. And it's not that the blues singers were all atheistic. It's not like they decided, like, no, the God of Jesus is not the God we're going to follow. It's just a lot of times they ignored God, or they left God out of that conversation and said, you know what, maybe God's out there, maybe He's not. I'm just going to tell you what's going on in my life right now. And it's a lot of blue. It's a lot of sad things, and that's more what you get in blues. So, yeah, but you do get these themes of hope. It's not necessarily hope in God, but it's hope that things will get better sometimes. It's hope simply of just survival in other cases. There's a big theme in the blues about traveling. If you listen to a few blues songs, you might hear somebody talk about packing their suitcase or catching a train. There's a ton of blues songs about trains that go to other cities. I'm going to Chicago. I'm going out west. I'm going up north. We're getting out of here. There's hope in something changing. So the fourth element, thing that we want to point out that's similar in the blues and in Lamentations, is this theme of things used to be better, but now they're not. Kind of like a looking back, things were great, or at least they weren't quite as bad, and now they're particularly bad. Let me just run through a few examples from Lamentations here, point out some of these things. The precious children of Zion were once worth their weight in gold, but now they're considered pots of clay. That's not as an exciting thing as we have, you know, Paul in 2 Corinthians. Oh, jars of clay, that's us. They're like, no, it used to be gold pots, and now they're clay pots. It's not the best. They used to be brought up in royal purple, but now they lie on ash heaps. Princes were brighter than snow and whiter than milk. Now they're blacker than soot, not even recognizable. We're familiar with God, you have turned my mourning into dancing, and these themes of reversal that God has done in Psalm 30. But down here in chapter 5, they flip that on its head and say, yeah, there used to be dancing, but now there's mourning. Where we used to dance, now we're just sad. You can go to the next slide. You see this in the blues as well. Some of these blues lyrics point this out. Sunhouse, my favorite blues voice, says, got up this morning feeling sick and bad. I was thinking about the good time that I once had. Things used to be good, but now I'm sick and I'm bad. Mississippi Fred McDowell, we listened to some of him on the way in. He said, when I had money, I had plenty of friends. I ain't got no money, baby. Honey, even no friends. All my friends are gone. And then similar sentiment down here, Bessie Smith, it was this lead female vocalist, kind of like wrote the rules and the playbook for most blues musicians and certainly female vocalists. She says, when you were lonesome, I tried to treat you kind, but since you got money, it's done changed your mind. So things are better for this guy, but not for her, because when he was down, she was kind and compassionate, and he received that. Then he got better off, and she's trying to be compassionate. He doesn't want to deal with it anymore. Things used to be good, or now they're not. The song that we're going to sing now points this out. It's called Motherless Blues. The same thing. First line, you're welcome to hear it and then repeat it. Sing along with us during the second line. But it's about a guy who things used to be good when my mom was around, but I've lost her. And now, not so much. So, Motherless Blues in F. As you clear your throats and warm up your voices.
Said I'm motherless, I'm fatherless, and I've been misfit. Said I'm motherless, I'm fatherless, and I've been misread. Say, I look at mother's pictures hanging outside the wall. I said, I look at mother's pictures hanging outside the wall. Every time I see it, my tears begin to fall. If I could see her smiling face, her fine smiling face once more. I can't follow that, I messed it up. I said, if I could see her smiling face, see her smiling face once more.
Good.
Better than me. I'd sail through drifting bay, drifting from door to door. Before I lost my mother, I had friends from miles around. I said, before I lost my mother, I had friends for miles around. Now that I've lost her, my friends can't be found. I used to call my mother, she used to come. Call my mother, she used to come to me. I said, now I'm calling, she can't answer me.
Good job. You guys sounded good. Thanks for helping us out with that one. Okay, fifth element. We did structure, raw honesty, hope, then versus now. And the last thing is kind of obvious, and you probably have seen this in the songs that we played already, and that's poverty, being poor, having no money. Lamentations, this certainly comes out. Did I put a slide? I think I have a few examples up here from Lamentations. A lot of it has to do with searching for bread, not being able to feed your children, and that theme that we saw earlier about mothers cooking their children and using them for food. Children say to their mothers, where is bread and wine? As they faint like the wounded in the streets of the city, as their lives ebb away in their mother's arms. Super sad. Because of the thirst, an infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth, and the children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them. That's pretty bad. And certainly you see this in the blues songs as well, talking about not having enough money to pay your bills, being on the run because you owe somebody money, or having money, but now it's all been lost and squandered, not being able to feed your families, things like that. We're playing one more song. It's called Tough Times, and that theme certainly comes out in here as well. This is Tough Times by John Brim. This doesn't follow the first and second line being the same. You're welcome to try to sing along if you want. This was a little bit of a different format, but the 12-bar blues, absolutely there. It's the same structure, and like we mentioned earlier. So here it comes.
Don't have no money, people. $10 a week. And they had a big layoff. And they got poor me. I'm broken, disgusted. Misery. Can't find a part-time job. Nothing in my house. Tough times. Tough times is here once more. You don't have no money, people. You can't be happy no more.
Jacob.
At the end of that third line, because it normally goes 8 bars, and that one only goes 6, so it's like, times are so tough, we couldn't even afford the last 2 bars. Well, I think we all face tough times in our lives, on our own scale. It may not be this tragic tongue stuck to the roof of your mouth, or freedom that's not realized in the same way as the voices that we're hearing today, but we all face tough times, and we all have things to lament about, we all have sadness, we all experience disappointment, disillusionment, feelings of hopelessness, and these expressions of lament can help us during these times. It's important to have this language. If you look at the book of Psalms, which is Israel's songbook, you find that lament as a form is the genre that's expressed the most often. We have thanksgiving psalms, we have praise psalms, we have laments, and there's more laments than any other kind. And yet if we look at our songbooks in most of our churches, there's a lot of praise songs, there's a lot of thanksgiving songs, there's a lot of celebration songs, and there's some lament songs, but it's disproportionate to what we find in Israel's songbook. It makes you wonder, okay, this was important for them, how come we've lost it along the way? Some people object to having expressions of lament in our churches, just outright. We don't want to deal with that for a variety of reasons. Some people think it seems faithless to talk about sadness and hopelessness when we all know there's hope in Christ, right? So put on a happy face and look at the cross, and you have that hope. I see the point they're trying to make, but maybe there's something missing there. Some people say that Old Testament expressions of faith are not binding anymore and not useful. You know, the canon within a canon, and Pentecost to Revelation is where we get our authority. I have issue with that as well, but we don't have time to get into that. But a lot of people just don't want to hear it. If people are honest, or if you're a song leader and you're picking songs, you don't go like, what's the saddest expression we can find? We're looking more for kind of an upbeat expression. People listen to pop stations more than they listen to blue stations. Is there a blue station? I don't know. I think I have one in my town. But we have to realize that not everybody is feeling up. Not everybody is wanting a pop song when they come to worship. People are grieving. People are suffering. People are not sure what they're supposed to do. And it's helpful for them to have a language that they can express. Go ahead and show. This is a book called Hurting with God by Glenn Pemberton. I thought it to be very, very helpful. He focuses on lament, primarily in the Psalms. There's a little bit on Lamentations, but it's mostly breaking down lament psalms and talking about why this is important in our churches, to give people this language. You may not be suffering, but you will You're going to experience something. And it's better to be equipped with that language rather than just to be like, man, this life experience does not have anything to do with church, according to what my church has been telling me so far with the way we worship and the language that we're allowed to use. He does a really good job giving some practical suggestions and things that churches can do. And again, I don't have time to kind of highlight those things, but I would definitely recommend this book and check it out. I want to close with just four thoughts that came out of these comparisons we made between blues and lamentations that I think can be helpful in churches. The reason why this language of lament is helpful. The first one is that it gives structure. Like we talked about, when people are in a time of disorientation, when they're in distress, having a set structure of lament, of saying like, what do I do when this person dies? What do I do when this hope and this dream was not realized? But you say, well, you're going to address God, because you got to include God in it. You're going to call it like it is. You're going to say, yes, we can. God can handle these complaints that we have. But we're going to have hope and we're going to have trust in God. Having that structure, knowing that language is very, very helpful. It's harder to teach that structure when somebody is in that life situation. It's better to do it preventatively, so to speak. So it gives structure, and that's helpful for faith communities. Second thing that this language does, it appropriately channels our rage as well as our hope. Walter Brueggemann has this great example of how he describes what a lament is. He says, imagine two of your children are playing in the backyard, and one of them hits the other one, hurts the other one, and they get like a bloody nose, and they're crying, and they come running into the house, and they go to their parent, and they say, Mom, my sister hit me. In my case, it's sisters, but brother or sister. They hit me. They hurt me. I want you to do something about it, which is actually a really, really healthy thing to do, rather than what are the other options the kid has? Hit him back? That's what we feel like doing, but we know that's not the way. Or you could just pretend like it didn't happen and just kind of repress it, suck it up, push it down. We know that that's not a healthy way to process anger and grief as well. But lament gives us this avenue to go to our parents, our God, and say, I want you to do something about it. And God, as the loving parent, says, you know what? I love you, child, who got hurt. I also love the person who hurt you. So let me sort it out. And let me decide what's going to be best. I think that's a good way of thinking about lament. The third thing is it's valuable because it's real. It's real talk. And I think a lot of our churches can use more honesty in our conversations. I was leading a small group in my home one time, and we were going through a study. We'd been meeting for a couple of years, so we were pretty close with one another. We were going through a study on Lamentations, and there was one member of our group who had just been through a drug rehab program. He was in this like 30-day program, and he showed up to the small group, and we did our study on Ephesians, and then we had prayer request time. What's going on in your life? How can we pray for you? We prayed, and that was pretty much it. And he shakes his head, and he goes, this is completely phony. He's like, what are we even doing here? He's like, I was in rehab, and I sat in a circle every day with these guys, and they were brutally honest about their sins, about their failures, about their problems, because they actually wanted to get better. They actually believed that it helped. He's like, this is nowhere close to that. And I said, well, I appreciate your thoughts. We should talk about that more later. I was not really ready for that kind of comment, but that it stuck with me. And I think he's right in a lot of ways, that we need to have more room for the realness of the trouble that life brings us. We need to be honest with ourselves and with one another in the community of Christ. And the final thing that I've noticed about the blues and lamentations is that these artistic expressions of these real life tragedies were meant to be read in community. Now, the lamentations are brought out, dusted off every single year, even now in the Jewish community, and they're read in August at this festival, this fast that they have in the ninth of Av, and they're remembered in a group. We gather around this word and we listen to the tragedies of the loss of Jerusalem. And the blues music we're experiencing in a community right now, it's not as good me sitting in a room by myself playing my guitar, doing my best. I promise you, it's a lot better with you guys singing with an Aaron and Justin on board. And that's how blues grew. It was in these clubs and bars and music halls where people were sharing these expressions together. Still, extremely popular form of music today. Community is an important part of this. I want to end with a quote that I got from my buddy Josh Ross. I saw on Facebook the other day. And this is something that struck a chord with me because I hear this language in my congregation sometimes. Josh says, at my church, we try to avoid this phrase. We try to avoid saying this, Leave all of your worries, burdens, and cares and to-do lists at the door and just come and worship God. Have you ever heard that in your church? He says, instead, we say this, bring all of your worries, burdens, cares, disappointments, and to-do lists, and let's lay them before God in worship together. I like that. I think that's faithful. That's all I got for you guys today. I appreciate you coming here. Give another hand for my musicians and clap for yourselves as well.